Fred Film Radio is joining the Sydney Film Festival Australia.
This is Cristiana Palmieri for Fred Film Radio from the Sydney Film Festival, and I'm in conversation with Alfrun Helga Ornolsdottir. I'm sorry for mispronouncing your surname.
It's perfect.
Director and screenwriter of Band. Azimina Proedru, director and screenwriter of Behind the Haystacks. Marta Savina, director and screenwriter of The Girl from Tomorrow. And Anna Hintz, director and screenwriter of Smoke Sauna Sisterhood. Good afternoon, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having us.
So, just a little bit of context for our audience. We are at the Sydney Film Festival Hub, and Alfrun, Azimina, Marta, and Anna participated along with Nafis, who unfortunately can't be with us. Nafis Nia, director and screenwriter of That Afternoon, another beautiful film. So you all participated to a panel discussion, Voices from Europe, in conversation with Sandy George from Screen International. And you discussed the approaches to filmmaking and how the landscape from women working in film varies across the continent, your identity being filmmakers who are not really attached to a particular residence. I heard from your discussion that you are really restless in terms of, some of you at least, in terms of a place of residence. That was a very interesting discussion. And so your films have been included in the Sydney Film Festival section, Europe, Voices of Women in Film, which includes 10 films by European women directors. And this program, which is a very good one, this is the 8th year of this program, champions women-directed films, celebrates the talents behind them, and tackles gender inequality. So, we don't have much time, but we'll get the most out of the time we have. I will go back to a few topics that you discuss in the panel discussion, but I really would like to start talking about your films. So, Alfrun, I will start with you.
Yeah.
And because we are on radio, it's really good to repeat the title of your films. So, Alfrun Helga Ornolsdottir, director and screenwriter of Band. Your film tells the story of the post-performance blues band, which is an Icelandic all-female rock band.
Yes.
And I would say avant-garde, but correct me if that label is incorrect. And there is a strong autobiographical component in this story. But this story is also about parenthood, friendship, and the dichotomy between success and failure. I would describe some of the themes in the film.
Yes.
So tell us more about Band.
Yes. So Band is it's kind of a comedy of failures, I guess. But it comes from feeling like I don't want to bury pain anymore, you know, because again and again you face rejection in life. And it's kind of something that I found healing is to go through it with my friends on stage. So the band kind of sings about life's failures, you know, what moments that we tend to kind of want to just hide, but we turn them into lyrics and powerful songs and performances. And I just had a very strong feeling when I was performing with my friends that this is something I wanted to document and share with the world. So we went in the film even further into just showing all our vulnerable moments and how kind of everyday life influences our art making. So therefore, the fact that we are all mothers and we have maybe multiple jobs and we're trying to juggle, you know, life and art and how to live like a stable life, finding some security but still wanting to be kind of playful and creative as grown-up women. So that is kind of what the film is.
And I really liked what you just said, Alfrun, the fact that there is a very strong playful element in the film. Even if sometimes you can see the struggle of this women in relation to juggling multiple tasks, daily tasks, being a mother, being a partner. But this playful element is what makes that film really, really enjoyable. That's my reaction.
Yes. And there's the power of friendship and, you know, having girlfriends, or it can be doesn't really matter the gender, but just sort of showing, you know, women who are not like young, like we're not like 20 something, a girl band. It's like grown up women's band. And for me, it is kind of the same as going out and play. Like as a kid, that is the feeling I have when I am performing with my best friends on stage, that, you know, you have this flow and this playfulness that I want to like share the message, like go and play, find your way of playing as an adult. Like, don't forget that.
And I think you managed to send the message across very strongly through the film, that playfulness comes out very strong.
Nice.
Thank you, Alfron. So, Azimina Proedoro, director and screenwriter of Behind the Haystacks. Very different film, not playful.
This is true. I'm sorry for my voice, you know. I'm using my voice.
Yeah. Well, I hope you still have voice for the entire film festival, otherwise that would be a shame for you. So I hope you will feel better soon. So this is a poignant story which revolves around three main characters, a family of three. And this is an exploration of religious hypocrisy, xenophobia, and people displacement. What was your motivation in making this film? Why did you want to tell this story?
Actually, the theme is about how everyday people, how weak we are, and how we submit to a corrupt structure, to a corrupt society, because the society there is corrupt. Or in other words, how a corrupt society with which ways reproduces itself. So this is the theme, and although there are of course other topics that the film deals with, but this is the main core, and it has to do with my personal fears, my philosophical questions, my political questions, and all this. It's something like, it was healing for me to make that film and explore this thing.
What I found very interesting, what you just said, because I can definitely relate to that. When I was watching the three chapters, Sturgis, Maria, Anastasia, all these three main characters, they have their weaknesses, and they are at the same time very lovable, because you want to love them because they are very good people, but they're also very sometimes obnoxious and they do very nasty things. So I think it's an exploration of the human nature, right? We are
exactly,
not all bad
exactly.
or good. It's just yes. this mix with this tapestry of different nuances and different layers.
Exactly. Nobody's good, only good or only bad. They are like normal, everyday people who are being pressured by the society. And that's why they can do very horrible things at the same time. And that's why you can't love them, because there's some light. It is a very dark world. This society is quite dark, but there's some light, and has to do with, you know, what is beautiful at the same time is human nature. So actually, yes, this is the exploration of the characters throughout the film. And that's what I wanted to do with the three chapters, because in each different chapter, we go deeper into the characters, and we see other deeper sides of themselves.
Because exploring different chapters, you discover different things about the chapter that you have just seen. That was really beautiful.
And the character as
and
well.
And the character.
Yes.
The story you tell is a very specific, I mean, geographically, in a very specific geographic area of Greece and North Macedonia. It's based on true events. To some extent,
because okay, there are a lot of fictional things. For example, in Doidan Lake, there were no people crossing. But there was another, like Idomeni, they were crossing from there. But it is true that in 2015, a lot of European countries closed their northern borders.
Oh yes,
borders,
during like the
Germany,
refugee
Hungary,
crisis.
There were thousands of migrants trapped on the northern border of Greece, and there was a huge crisis then. And those, yes, it's based on true events, but okay, it's a fiction, it's fictional. The characters and everything, and many parts of the story are fictional.
Thank you, Azimina. Let's move to Marta. Marta Savina, director and screenwriter of The Girl from Tomorrow. This is probably the name that I'm pronouncing without any mistakes because it's my own native language. So I can deliver Marta Savina.
Perfect, perfect accent.
So the story you tell, Marta, in The Girl from Tomorrow is based on true events that happened in Sicily, Italy in the 60s. And revolves around Leah and her fight for the right to refuse to marry her rapist. And this is very important in the story because the social background that you tell in this film ultimately influenced the abolition of an outrageous piece of legislation in Italy. Would you like to unpack this social background and tell us more about that?
Sure. So Italy in the 60s, but, you know, like up until much later on, sort of like pinned the value of a woman on her virginity. And so losing the virginity was losing her worth and her honor. And there was a tradition which was called fuitina, which meant running away, eloping with the boyfriend, which was sometimes used to get married when the families didn't give their consent or when they were opposing the marriage. But sometimes it was just sort of like an act of violence, and you know, a guy would just kidnap basically the girl that he chose and that he wanted, and they would disappear together. And that in itself was already enough for the girl to lose her honor. And so the only honorable and thinkable action to take was to get married. And obviously sometimes when the couple would disappear together, there was sex. And it's kind of like impossible to determine how much was forced and how much was consented to. But there was an actual law that stated that if rape was committed, in case the guy offered to marry the woman, all the charges would be dropped and he wouldn't be persecuted. And that was an actual law in the Italian constitution. In the Italian...
Legal system.
Legal system. Yeah.
Not hundreds of years ago.
That was up until 1981.
Yeah.
And so I was born in 1986, and that completely shocked me. When I found out that it was like until before 5 years before I was born, that was a shock to my system because it sounded so retrograde and so crazy that there was an actual law that regulated this. And so this was one of the reasons why I was sort of moved to make this film, and because all the stories that I've heard in my family, so my dad's from Sicily, and so I've heard lots of like family stories, even like his great aunts that were sort of like forced into marriage. You know, like it became really real and really sort of like close to me. And I feel like if I were born like 10 years earlier, that could have also happened to me. Like, you know, so that was shocking.
And what is really nicely done in the film, in my opinion, is Leah, the main character, because you managed to portray Leah very strong, but also very vulnerable at the same time. And this is not an easy task to accomplish.
Yeah, that was like from the right off the bat, that was like the goal for that character. Like kind of like as Simina was saying before, I think as human beings we're complex. We can't always be strong. We're gonna have our weaknesses, you know, even if we're like, even I think I'm like I think people would generally describe me as a strong person, but like I have my moments of weakness and I want to reclaim them. Like I have the right to be weak. I have the right to be not only vulnerable, but just like I have the right to break down and to cry and to refuse to do things out of fear. I think we as women should be given that right, and I think we should give representation to this weakness of women on screen, because it's something that doesn't get explored in mainstream cinema very often. Yeah. And so it was something that I was interested in, and I think like politically it's important to do.
Yeah, and as I said, the Leah, the main character, really is portrayed in a way that this message gets really across.
Thank you.
Anna.
Yes.
Anna Hintz, director and screenwriter of Smoke Sauna Sisterhood. So I would describe your film a film that plays with audience expectations, because you are prepared to watch a film on the traditional use of sauna, but you end up being absorbed into a story full of emotions, humanity, intimacy. Was really a journey for me. Thank you. It was a beautiful, beautiful film. And I also learned from the credits at the end of the film that the smoke sauna tradition in Southeast Estonia is part of UNESCO list of intangible cultural heritage of humanity. I did not know that, and it was a fascinating discovery. So tell us more about this documentary, which really tackles so many different issues and topics. This is impossible to sum up, really.
Thank you. So I come from that tradition of Southeast Estonia. We call Võromaa and Setomaa, and I have roots to both of these cultures and speak the language. And
sorry to interrupt you. So is this a dialect? The language
we call it language. So, that's a debate. Estonians say that, oh, this is dialect. But when you go to, I was in Karelia with Helsinki University professor, and they see it as language, different language. So it is a debate.
Okay.
For us, it is language. And it's like this, that when I speak it, then, for example, my editor, who's from Tallinn, from the north of Estonia or capital, he doesn't understand.
So no, they are not very similar.
Yeah, it is the question. Well, it's a question. What is the similar? They are more similar than Estonian and English. But they are both in the same Finno-Ugric language group.
Yeah.
But it's the same. Like, for example, I have not studied Finnish, but I understand Finnish.
Right. Okay.
So it's, no, they are similar, but at the same time, he doesn't understand.
Yeah.
So I come from that tradition, and it's very important to me, because my first years I was born, brought up with my granny. I was living there. So it's really the smoke sauna tradition is kind of in my body, in my veins. And it is not like regular sauna. It is smoke sauna. It is different type of how it's heated. And it's also important to notice that it is a spiritual place. So it's not like, oh, you go like in a spa sauna or something, or just to relax. It is a place where women used to give birth, wash the dead, heal for centuries. It is where you go to wash not just your body, but also your soul. And smoke sauna is really, maybe like resemblance can be to Native American sweat lodges.
The sweat lodges, I was thinking about.
Yes,
that.
And every time you go to smoke sauna, like you are like something in you dies and something in you is born again. And it is the safe space that I remember from my childhood, where absolutely like all emotions and all experiences could be shared. And there is like huge power in validating, giving voice to all of that. Nothing is too shameful or too painful or whatever. It's like you release the emotions, you release the stories, and through the support of the community, through being like heard, not charged, not patronized, not taught. You know, I share something, I don't need advice from you. I just need that I'm heard. And there is huge power in that, and there are like, of course, healing chants and a lot of connected with water, you know, and to understand smoke sauna, really the philosophy of that or our culture essence is the connection with nature, and that nature is has spirit, is spirited, and also we have different understanding of time is not linear, time is cyclic. So it's different relation to death, different relation to future. It is like all is connected, and we have like special smoke saunas where you invite your ancestors, dead ancestors, and And I think when I think about my own like really experience that where the roots of the film go unknowingly, subconsciously, is when I was 11 and my grandfather had died and his body was in the house. And then we went to smoke sauna before funeral one day. This is often what you do with my granny and aunt and niece. And then granny was only time there. She told that grandfather had betrayed on her and lived with another woman. And it was so difficult. She had four kids. It was like post-war. And she released all the emotions. All like anger and everything. And imagine, like, usually it's like not so nice to do before funeral, you know, talk about it. No, but she really released everything. She said, "I'm so angry," letting like the anger and everything out. One smoke sauna session lasts like around 4 hours. Then when we went out, I really felt that she had made peace with grandfather. That next day we could bury grandfather in peace. And it's like, it really struck me to my body that, you know, that, yeah, nothing is too shameful or too painful, or you shouldn't hide things, that there is huge power in revealing things. And healing, through revealing, healing can come. And it's, you know, how to have the safe space to be vulnerable and how important it is. So that's kind of the message of the film, you can say.
Very powerful message indeed, and very human. I really appreciate the humanity in the message.
Thank you.
This is maybe you don't have an answer, but when did it come part of UNESCO list of intangible cultural heritage? Roughly, I mean, as a recent thing?
I think it is within like 5 years or something.
Oh, quite recent.
Okay. Or maybe I'm wrong. I'm not so good in... not more than 10 years.
Not more than 10 years. Mm. So it's a fairly recent.
But of course, the tradition is like old, pre-Christian.
Centuries.
Yes, pre-Christian.
Not millennials.
Yeah, that we don't know. It's only through oral history we can, through songs and chants, we see that it's very old.
Thank you, Anna. This is fascinating. Mm-hmm. So let's go back to, as I said at the beginning of this interview, you all participated in this panel discussion about women in film, and many topics, very fascinating topics, were discussed, such as identity, culture, feminism, European filmmaking communities. What I would like to go back to an extent is a question for you, because you are all here as part of this European scheme that support women filmmakers in Europe. So, talking about being a female filmmaker in your respective countries, what is your experience? I mean, I would like to hear your stories about when you decided, when you tried to become a filmmaker. How was your journey? Easy? Difficult, much more difficult than expected, not so difficult, because I think this experience can help a new generation of female filmmakers to come into the industry. So let's start with, who wants to start? Any volunteer?
Yes, I can start.
Alfrun, yes.
Alfrun. So I come from Iceland, and I actually come into filmmaking from, like, I have an acting background, and I worked a lot in theatre, but I've been acting for 30-something years. But I had to find my own courage to actually step into this new role, because first I was just going to, I had the idea to make a film, and I was going to have somebody else direct it, and actually a man, which is kind of irrelevant in a way, but I just had to kind of realized that I needed to kind of step up and stand by myself in a way, and find other powerful women, or, you know, courageous women to kind of I had to kind of seek their support for me to be able to kind of feel comfortable in this new role. But once I accepted that, then I felt pretty safe. But we also do have like a quota in Iceland. They are like trying to support female filmmakers. So you can feel that, you know, you have not like an advantage, but that people are aware to kind of open the path for us. So I think like if I'd made the decision 10 years
earlier to make this film, it would have been a different experience. So I feel like now it's like, okay, let's lift up women. Let's, you know, so that's helpful, but you're also just like, you want to be a filmmaker in your own right. Like, you don't want to be kind of attached to it. To a gender, so it's kind
as
of like
yes. The
panel, so there is
yes.
always this kind of mixed emotion, but
yeah.
but I think it is really important, not just for women, but for non-binary and just any marginalized group.
Yeah,
you know, to kind of like we need to lift them up for now, and then hopefully one day we'll have equality and we can just all be equals.
Yeah. Well, this taps into something that is very relevant in Australia, where we are now, in relation to indigenous filmmaking.
Yes.
So this is something that really relates to what you just said about yes. marginalized yes. Groups or minority groups.
Yeah.
Marta, during the panel discussion, you mentioned an episode that happened to you when... the driver was coming to pick you up to take you to the set. Could you please repeat that? Because that episode that happened to you, because I think is really related to what we are discussing now. So experience in
yeah.
filmmaking as female filmmakers.
I mean, I have a collection of these kind of stories, and I think, I mean. I tell it as a joke because it really did make me laugh, but of course, I don't think it would have ever probably happened to men. I was waiting for the driver to pick me up to go to set, and when I walked downstairs, I opened the door of the car, and he stopped me, being like, "Oh no, sorry, I'm waiting for a director." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's me. I'm the director." And they looked at me and they were like, "Are you sure? Because you look like really, really, really young." And I said, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's me. And, you know, like I came down because we need to go to set. So let's go. But that's just an example. But I think it's interesting, like because I came into filmmaking, I moved to, I think I was very lucky because I became a filmmaker outside of Italy. So I went to London first and then I went to Los Angeles. And I think I experienced what Alfred was talking about. So like I was living in a moment of let's lift people up. And it was very cool in a way, especially in Los Angeles, to be a woman. And so I kind of like, I never felt like I was struggling in my woman filmmaker identity until I came back to Italy, to shoot the film. Because everybody in the U.S. wanted the story and they wanted to make the film in the U.S. And I felt really strongly that it had to be shot in Italy with Italian Sicilian actors that spoke the language, the Sicilian language. And so when I got back to Italy, it took many years before I actually found... a producer and Virginia Valsecchi and the right home for the film because nobody wanted to make it, even if it was, you know, like based in true events and was an important Italian story because everybody was like, ah, yeah, we're not interested in a rape film, which, by the way, it's not because it's not, I think it's very patronizing and really sort of like harsh to define because it's really not a rape film. And but it was weird how they would talk about it because they were like, oh, you know, like men are not going to watch a rape film. And because it's, you know, like it's also from the point of view of a woman, which sounds really fucked up. Women are not going to go watch a rape film. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. It's like you really missed the point. And so it took a really long time in Italy, and so I really felt how hard it was and, you know, how much of a struggle it was to just have a voice and just tell the story that you want to tell. And I think, like, I mean, it's not like who cares if nobody wants to see it, but I think it's a film that, for example, when it came out in Italy, they extended the release and they put it in more cinemas after the first week because like everybody was actually responding really well to the film. So clearly, it wasn't just a rape film or like an issue film.
Huge misalignment between the perception of the producers.
Yeah, I mean, I think like you know, it's not just the producers. I think it's a conversation that we have to have with distributors and
yeah.
like sales agents and like. Exhibitors, mm-hmm. Because ultimately they're also the ones that put these films into cinemas, and obviously we can sort of like do a grassroots action and distribute the film elsewhere and, you know, go through festivals, but then it's the theaters that really put the picture in front of the people.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, thank you, Marta, for sharing with us your experience. Asimina, your experience in this landscape, please.
Well, actually, I have similar experience with...
In Greece.
Yes, but not exactly the same. I have similar experiences to Marta's with a car, but not with a car, actually. But, I don't need to get into details.
No, not necessarily.
But, I think everybody has. I didn't have much difficulty in financing the film. The producer, it was a co-production with Germany and North Macedonia. So it was not a difficulty because, female directors now in Greece are getting financed for their films. But I had difficulty in other parts, which means that, like, collaborating sometimes
with the crew or...
I had a really great collaboration with some people and, being a woman, I was then 38 years old and being a woman and making your first film is not, especially when you have a man who is very, very experienced already, and much older than you, it's not...
Was
very easy
avenue.
Yeah, but at the same time, I had really, really great collaboration with men on set, so it can be very difficult for a woman nowadays to work. And the thing is that everybody expects for a director to be very tough, so it's not actually in their minds that you're a woman. It's like you're not behaving like you're not being tough, and some people do not respect you because you're not being very tough.
These stereotypes of the tough
Of the director that, I'm the director, I know everything, I don't have any doubts, and now you will do what I tell you. So I was not doing that. I was different.
Perceived in a weaker...
But not weaker. I mean, it's not...
It's not about weakness, then?
It's not about...
No.
I mean, they were perceiving as I was weak.
Weaker... the portrayal of a weaker persona.
Because, you can be strong, for example, and have doubts. Everybody has doubts. Mm-hmm. Everybody. I mean, people play... They pretend to be sure, but in this world, you can never be sure, because you can never know how your film will come across to an audience. You are never sure. You make an estimation. So pretending, I didn't want to pretend to be sure when I was not sure. So it's kind
this
of
element,
complicated.
Yeah,
it's kind
yeah,
of
yeah.
complicated, yes.
Thank you, Asimina, for sharing with us.
Thank
Anna,
you.
Yes.
Your experience in this scenario.
In this, many. Well, let's start... when I went to film school, I was 28, because when I was a teenager, I actually had the feeling that I wanted to be a filmmaker, but I was so broken and so, fucked up in a way that I understood that I need to heal first. And part of being so broken was that all my life, somehow I had heard or experienced that I was wrong. I was wrong the way I was. I was not fitting to the box, and there was violence and so on. So, and when I was ready to go to film school, after years of therapy and doing other things and being in contemporary art and music, I had a daughter also. And then when I went to the exams, the committee was like, oh, mostly male, of course, male directors. They're like, oh, yeah. And they're like, we have no questions for the portfolio. Very strong, very strong, very strong. But we have a question. You're a mother. And then there's silence. And I'm like, yeah.
So what?
So what? I was like, well, how you intend to, do you know, this school is very intense and like, it's like, will you manage, how can you manage to be a director and a mother? And I was like, well, do you ask these kind of questions from, you know, fathers or thank you very much of being, I can handle my grown up 28-year-old person and I can figure out my life myself if I'm here, you know, then probably I handle this. But so it was, there was this still, that some teachers who were then in film school also saying that, oh, you know, there are two choices for females, either motherhood or film directing. You cannot be both because it's so demanding. You have to be like male. Then I identify as non-binary. So later when they were like, oh, you're strong, then they were, oh, but that's the male part of you. that's like, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, okay, Anna is an exception because she's not really a woman, you know.
They always say that. Yeah, it happened to me too. Goodness. Oh, that's your male part.
I'm like, what? So that was 2010. When I entered film school. So, we are part of the change. I'm part of the change also in the talk in Estonia and talking about, because still filmmaking is taught in school. Still now, according to the voices of strong male directors, and I mean even females who are teaching, they are like giving, you know. And I really remember, and this is like a stamp there that, oh, a worst thing what is insecure director. And then I'm like, no, right now openly talking, I am insecure. Everyone is insecure. I have my right to be insecure. I have my right to be emotional. I have my right to have doubts, to not know. But, you know, so I hope to make the change because it has been looked upon very badly. And even there are cases, what I remember from studying film, where, you know, humiliation and like, you know, patronizing, oh, just hysterical, Anna, get to your male part. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, it's like, not taken seriously, not because who I am, but taken seriously because it's like, oh, you're this non-binary weird. Okay, you are like part of the male gang, you know. So,
and just to sort of like add to that, because I completely relate to it. I had people on set being like, oh, you're a good director. You're so cool. You're so tough. You're like a man. And I'm like, no, I'm not. So that is really weird. And I identify as a woman. So they couldn't even, you know, like, point that to me, which is stupid anyways. But, you know, like, it's kind of, but I think what they're doing, because what Anna was saying, like, not being sure and sort of like not having all the answers, you know, that is part of the process of filmmaking and of art, creating art. Because, like, we're not doing equations. Mm-hmm. We're not engineers. We won't have a certain answer at the end. But I think that's what is exciting about filmmaking and about art.
It's about searching.
It is about searching. And it's about experimenting. And about, like, finding out a way.
Exploring.
You won't have all the answers. Like, there's no way you will, like, You're trying to figure things out, and I think that's a right for an artist. And I think as a woman, sometimes you feel this pressure of always having to be assured and have all the answers and convince everybody else, and you can't show your weaknesses because you have to be part of a male gang to feel like respected and accepted. And I think that's just, it's not even about being a man or a woman, it's about being an artist and figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
I think as long as you are basically honest and genuine and tell people, I'm not sure, but I'm going to figure out, so you don't lose the trust.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because that's the worst thing that happens.
Yeah.
You can't do it without being like, I know exactly what's going on, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's just really hard, I think, to navigate, to kind of like get to the point where you feel okay, being like, do you know what? I don't actually know. Figure it out. Let's figure it out.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
And there is no, you know, no problem in that.
Yes.
From my point of view.
There shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, exactly. So considering your experience, and we really need to wrap up, unfortunately, I would stay talking with you forever. But I think that what you are telling me is, and to Fred's audience, is very inspiring and almost positive. It's very positive, but I think there is still ground to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really happy to hear that you are looking at contributing to change this landscape for future generations.
Yes.
This is really good.
Yes.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Really thank you so much.
Enjoyed our conversation. And so I've been talking to Alfrun Helga Ornosdottir, director and screenwriter of BAND, Azinina Proedru, director and screenwriter of Behind the Haystacks, Marta Savina, director and screenwriter of The Girl from Tomorrow, and Anna Hintz, director and screenwriter of Smoke, Sauna, Sister, all attending the Sydney Film Festival. And I'm Christina Palmieri for Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider from the Sydney Film Festival Hub.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.